Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons podcast. This is Travel Commons number 47, recorded Sunday, October 22nd, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Just one topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, a special listener travel stories edition of Travel Commons. Well, this week, back in the saddle, or the exit row aisle seat, as the case may be, I did a quick up and back to San Francisco this past week, as quick as that can be from Chicago, flying out Thursday morning, returning Friday afternoon. And of course, a bit quicker than my flights last week. As I mentioned in our last podcast, I took vacation last week for a quick four-day jaunt to London with my mother and daughter. Chicago to London is twice as long as this week's dash to San Francisco, but British Airways Club World is a bit more pleasant, relaxing, enjoyable, comfortable, pick your adjective, than American Airlines domestic coach. The welcome announcement on my flight to San Francisco to SFO. We have wonderful Otis Spunkmeyer muffins on sale this morning for $2. Please remember that we don't serve any food, no chips, no pretzels, with our beverage service. Well, if nothing else, that let me know I was back in the saddle, because I could start to feel those saddle sores again. The BA Club World flights were very nice, 777s with lay-flat seats. My mother and daughter just ate them up. And on the flight back home, the flight attendants just ate up my daughter, the only kid in business class, and you know, if I can brag just a small bit, a well-mannered one with pleases and thank yous for the flight attendants all around. Well, of course, this meant that they would come around even more, offering her drinks and snacks. And then leaving the plane, to everyone it was, goodbye, goodbye, thank you for coming, goodbye, goodbye. Oh, Claire, thank you, we enjoyed having you, have a good night. It was funny. Back to reality. I don't know, Thursday morning at O'Hare, if it was me or just the air had suddenly thickened up, but everything was moving slow. And on top of it, I was doing a lousy job of picking lines. I picked the line with the slowest TSA screener, the Starbucks line, now that we can take coffee on board. I ended up with in the line with the most multi-adjective drink orders. I'll tell you, I had to look down and dig deep for inner tranquility when the woman three spots in front of me got up to the register, scanned the menu board for what seemed to be quite some time. Now, you know what? I mean, we're in queue for at least 3 minutes. You would have thought that she was sort of prepped by looking at that board, spent some of that queue time thinking about her order rather than waiting until she got up in front of the register. So she scans the board and then, seriously, orders a tall, skim, half-decaf, sugar-free pumpkin spice latte. I think everybody took a collective gasp at that order. But on the good side, it was only the interior air in O'Hare, I think, that had thickened up. A clear, sunny morning in Chicago, and we got off on time. Always something to celebrate at O'Hare. So following up, in my continuing travails with my Equident tooth powder, I did not get a chance to see how Heathrow Security would react to my tooth powder because I checked my luggage. Both my mother and daughter checked theirs, you know, makeup and the like, so there was really no reason to carry mine on. Thursday morning at O'Hare, though, I got pulled over again with the TSA screener again pulling out my tooth powder, telling me that I needed to put it in a plastic bag. I again pointed it out that it was tooth powder. The screener was a bit more belligerent than the previous ones. Well, I didn't read the label, sir. So, you know, you opened everything else, the solid deodorant, the stick hair wax, but you couldn't take the time to even shake the tooth powder bottle. And, you know, by the way, you know, isn't it your job to kind of look at labels before immediately telling people that they got to either throw stuff away or put it in plastic? Yeah, I tell you, I'm thinking about just pulling that bottle out and putting it in the gray tub next to my laptop just to cut down on these detours. But I'll tell you, I did not have any problem coming through SFO on my return flight Friday morning or Friday afternoon. So I don't know. It's got to be something about O'Hare, and it's not just in one terminal because I've had problems both in Terminal 1 and in Terminal 3. So I don't know. I think the Equident guys, if nothing else, they need to print the word powder in larger type. Of course, you got to watch out what you print. Udayan Tripathi sent me a link to a story on the Boing Boing website about a guy going through the Milwaukee airport who wrote, "Kip Hawley is an idiot." Kip being the head of the TSA, wrote that on a clear plastic bag that he was ordered to put his liquids into and ran it through the x-ray machine. A TSA screener detained him for 25 minutes, telling him that the First Amendment didn't apply in airport security. I'll put a link to that that civics lesson in the show notes. Actually, arriving in London last week, I took the Heathrow Express from the airport to Paddington Station, and from there a cab to the Marriott County Hall on the south bank of the Thames. Got to use those frequent sleeper points sometimes. We mentioned the Heathrow Express train in Travel Commons number 30 when we were talking about taking trains to the airport. I like the service, and it hits the right balance between cost and convenience. A cab from Heathrow into the city is god-awful expensive, but you know, schlepping luggage through the tube, making a connection with my 66-year-old mother and my 11-year-old daughter, and luggage, no thanks. I noticed something new on this trip, though. When the train pulled up, they made everybody stand behind a white line some 3 feet away from the train. Then, after the train emptied, security personnel walked the length of the train, looking under the seats and in luggage racks. And then, after the walkthrough was complete, they let us on board. I noticed something similar when we were getting on the London Eye, that big Ferris wheel right outside the Marriott on the south bank of the Thames there. Instead of Ferris wheel seats, you ride in an enclosed capsule. And while waiting in line, I watched two guys with metal detectors quickly sweep each capsule before boarding the next group. A few days later, I saw portable metal detectors set up to screen people attending a remembrance ceremony for the Bali bombing victims there off of Whitehall. You know, but I didn't notice increased security in the underground or the buses. But then again, given the volumes of people that pass through the tube, I'm not sure what they do. And I'll tell you, it certainly didn't keep us from using it. We'd picked up one of those 7-day travel cards stateside before we went over, and we wore them out. It's a distance that you're feeling. It's a distance you conceal. It's a distance that for far too long we both prayed wasn't real. But tonight, two hearts will break a deal. So the first and only topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is listener travel stories. You know, I've been talking about myself so often in the recent podcasts that I have been, I think, remiss in sharing some of your stories that have been sent recently to the comments email box. That's comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, which Ken Asako, if I've got his name right, started off his note kind of reiterating that address. So Ken sent me a note a few months back to the comments mailbox. First, my sympathies to Ken. He said, "I listened to episodes 1 to 39 on my 25-hour trip across the Pacific and back." Ouch! If that doesn't make your brain bleed out your ears, I don't know what will. But anyhow, Ken talks about a family trip he took to Japan in July. On the outbound, he connected through O'Hare. He didn't much care for it, though. He says, "I found O'Hare to be an old, dark airport, not the nicest of airports in my opinion. I like lots of light with a view of the outside. It must have been an old airport as they were just switching from the old CRT flight displays to newer LCD flight status displays." You know, and Ken was in Terminal 3, which is one of the nicer terminals. We boarded our 777 on time, sat down, got comfy. Moments later, the dreaded message came across the PA. "Hello, folks, this is your captain speaking. Our plane is experiencing some sort of sensor problem. We're not sure when we'll be able to fix this, but we have people on it right now. Please stay seated, wait for more information." 45 minutes of silence goes by. Then another message. "Hello, folks, it's me again, the captain. Looks like we may have to move to another 777 that's sitting in the hangar, so please prepare for deplaning." Another 15 to 20 minutes goes by, and then we're all ordered out of the plane. We sit back in the gate and watch them take our broken 777, push it back, and send it back to the hangar. Just then, the PA speaker comes on. It tells us all to go to gate 25 or something like that. And since the flight was booked to capacity, there was a stampede of some 200 people to the new gate. Yes, Ken, I've experienced that airplane shuffle a couple of podcasts ago. I think I talked about the airplane shuffle that I had in LAX, where we went sprinting across, I think, between three different gates and two different terminals. You know, just what you're looking for, a little exercise before you get on that Trans-Pacific flight. Anyhow, Ken says, after the two-hour delay, we finally got on our way to Japan. We landed two and a third hours late, but I guess it's better late than never. The return leg of the trip went as planned. The flight to Dallas was actually 30 minutes early. Thanks to the tailwind, we got to arrive early. Don't see that happening too often. I was thrilled. I had booked a super tight connection back to Toronto with a one-hour stop. The early flight turned out to save me and my family in the end. Due to the long line at U.S. Customs, I would have missed my connection otherwise. Thankfully, that was not the story. The customs agent was super nice. He joked a little and even tried to speak some Japanese. I found that cool. I gave him a thank you and then walked off to get my luggage. The carousel got jammed after 10 minutes of operation. Most people had already gotten their stuff, so they didn't bother to fix it. Unfortunately, my four bags were stuck in the small area that had some wooden rafters over it due to construction. This made it impossible for me to get my stuff, so when no one was looking, I crawled underneath it and got my stuff. I don't think anyone saw me. Yeah, probably not, otherwise they would have sent the dogs after you. But Ken, good thing you're still young and limber. Otherwise, you definitely would have missed that connection. And thanks for that story. Take knee pads with you next time. Casey Milch from Arlington, Virginia, sent her story of trying to get home from a college tour in Miami a few years ago. She says, "Spent the weekend in sunny Miami and watched the Weather Channel as a big storm began to slam the East Coast along the D.C., Philadelphia, New York corridor." There's a cocktail of mixed emotions for you, Casey. Sort of that, you know, the usual schadenfreude from watching bad weather while you're at sort of a beachside bar. Combine that with the dread of having to fly into that mess the next day, or, as Casey tells us, the next couple of days. Sunday morning comes and we leave for Miami Airport, preparing to board our flight to Atlanta and then back home to D.C. Well, Delta wouldn't even let us take the Miami to Atlanta leg due to weather and the fact that we'd for sure be stuck in Atlanta. Well, there you go. Here's your choice: camping out in Hartsfield on a cot or spending another day on the beach in Miami. I don't know. I'm going to go right out on a limb. I don't think that's a tough choice. Anyhow, Casey says, Tuesday morning, we go back to the airport and spend the whole day there waiting to board any flight that will bring us into the D.C. area. Tuesday night, we made it onto the last Delta flight from Atlanta to Dulles, and 48 hours after a scheduled return, arrived back home in Virginia. A funny thing happened at Hartsfield, though, in the midst of our wait. I have asthma and travel with a breathing machine and some medication. Somehow, my father and I were so distracted that we left the one bag containing the meds at the food court table. Next thing you know, we hear Delta Airlines paging passenger Milch, "You left a bag here at the counter. Please make your way over to gate B6. We raced over, retrieved the bag, thanked the customer service rep, and as we walked away, my father leaned over and said, "Casey, we're going to keep this incident a secret between us and not tell your mother." Well, I'll tell you, Casey, not sure what that breathing machine looks like, but I think you're lucky that somebody didn't try and detonate it. And you know, I get cranky when I'm 2 hours late, and here's a story about being 2 days late. Your patience is admirable. And you had a little father-daughter bonding experience also. And just having finished one of those in London with my daughter, something I think you'll always be able to keep track of there. And then Steve Frick of the Frick's World blog responded to my story in Travel Commons number 45 on stumbling across the Bay Trail behind the San Francisco Airport Marriott. Well, Steve tells a similar discovery he made on one of his journeys. Similar to your Bay Trail discovery, I stayed at the Hampton Inn in Columbia, South Carolina, which is located on the banks of Lake Harbison. There was 11 miles of trails, and the hotel had bikes that you could check out and cruise the trails with. It was an unexpected surprise. Well, you know, especially, Steve, because they don't advertise it anywhere. You go to their website, it's all about free internet and free breakfast. Nothing about 11 miles of bike trails around the lake. But, you know, then again, we tend to pack our travel schedules so full that I think it would be the rare frequent traveler who would have time for an 11-mile spin, and I loved a bike ride. So if I'm ever in Columbia, South Carolina, I'm holding a half day open. I'm booking myself into that Hampton Inn just so I can take a lap around the lake. Amy Hodge left a note on the website. Having just returned to San Francisco on a nonstop flight from Boston, I felt the need to vent some irritation at the airlines and felt this was the perfect place to do it. Well, you're absolutely right, Amy. This is the place to put it down. And, you know, I'll tell you, having done the counter flow to that San Francisco to Boston a few weeks back, I can feel your pain. You know, I think I've still got a crick in my neck from trying to catch some sleep. Anyway, Amy continues, I know that the airlines are cutting costs, so while it irks me that they no longer give out food for free, and let me interrupt here, by the way, on my, my flight from San Francisco to, or from Chicago to San Francisco and back, $800, right? And I don't get a package of pretzels. If there's one rock in my shoe nowadays about airline food, that one's got to be it. Anyhow, back to Amy's story. She says, I have to admit I'd rather have good pilots than good food, and it's not like the food was good in coach anyhow. My problem on this trip, though, was that the food service, by a $5 snack box, was offered 30 minutes into a six-hour cross-country flight. Now, most people, knowing the food service on board is non-existent these days, were eating in the airport while waiting for the flight, myself included. Now, why can't the airlines offer the food service, say, halfway through the flight when people are getting hungry instead of forcing them to eat immediately and then get nothing but a small cup of some drink for the rest of the flight? I mean, sure, you can save some of the snacks for later, but it's kind of a hassle to jam everything into the seat pocket in front of you or wherever else you can put it. And I'll tell you, Amy, nowadays, with quick plane turns, you go into some of those seat back pockets at your own risk. On my flight back home from San Francisco on Friday, somebody had left behind an air sickness bag filled with McDonald's French fries and ketchup. Now, it's not as bad as if somebody had used it for its intended purposes, but still. You know, it reminds me actually of a story that I may have already told on this podcast, but who cares? It fits right in. A friend of mine who lived in Brussels was taking his family for a vacation to Tunisia. And getting on the plane, he noticed sort of an odd odor, but couldn't quite figure it out. And so the meal service comes around, the flight attendants passing out the dinner trays to all the passengers. So far, nothing odd. But then it all came clear. Rather than waiting for the attendant to pick up the dinner trays, the passengers were just pulling open the seat back pockets and jamming the dirty trays in and then closing up the seat back table. Now my friend knew where the unique odor was coming from. I don't think it's gotten that bad on U.S. flights yet, but I'll tell you, I've looked into some kind of spooky seat back pockets recently. So anyhow, finishing up on Amy's comment. On a lighter note, the TSA agent at the security screening in San Francisco on the way out on Saturday was a one-man show. He kept us all informed and entertained in his loud, booming voice. Ladies, you can take lipstick on the plane, and men, since this is San Francisco, you can take your lipstick on the plane as well. You know, Amy, as I've said before, about 80% of the TSA folks are really good, reasonable people just trying to do their job the best way possible. Now, if they could just keep the remaining 20% of their colleagues down in the basement screening checked luggage, life at the screening checkpoints would be so much easier. And finally, though not strictly a travel story, Hillary Bauman of the Clothing Cult blog, try saying that three times fast, forwarded me the October 11th edition of the Daily Candy travel email, which gave some of the best made-up travel words. So here we go. Arm wrestle, the ongoing battle waged with your seatmate over the middle armrest. Maneuvers include elbow guarding, the slow advance of the elbow to gain ground, and recline and conquer, capturing the armrest during feigned or actual sleep. You know, this arm wrestle thing, there's actually a little blurb in this month's Wired magazine kind of giving a graphic three-step description on how to take over the center armrest. Here's another one. Flight dependent. Neighboring passenger who, flying solo, turns to you in search of company, a drinking partner, a date. John the Laptist, the guy in front of you who reclines his seat until his head is in your lap. And let's see. Turon, a combination of tourist and moron, with the example being, don't even bother with the Louvre on Saturday. It's overrun with Turons. Travelanche, the state of affairs when one little thing goes wrong and then everything snowballs towards disaster. A little bit of Casey Milch's story. Here's the example. It started with a minor delay in Seattle and ended up a full-blown travelanche involving lost luggage, bad airport food, and dire intestinal consequences. And then finally, USO, unidentified stained object. Mysterious mark on hotel carpet or bedding. Alexis refuses to stay at subpar hotels due to her intense fear of USOs. I'll tell you, I've been seeing some USOs on some airplane seats also, but those are pretty good. Those are good. I got a good kick out of those. If anybody has got any other suggestions, just send them on in. And Hillary, thanks for sending these along. I will put a link to the Daily Candy page in the show notes. And thanks to everyone who sends in and contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler, the email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or you can always post them at the website at travelcommons.com. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons number 47. I hope you all enjoyed this special listener travel story edition, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is from Podsafe Audio, Shadows by, I'm not even going to try and pronounce their name. You're going to have to, Antardhayan. You're going to have to check that one out in the show notes if you liked the first one. And The Distance by Scotland Barr and the Slow Drags. There's a good band name for you. Anyhow, check out the show notes for the artist details. The website is podsafeaudio, all one word, .com. Again, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. As always, thanks to everyone who takes the time to send in emails, audio files, or posts comments on the website. I really appreciate it. And so, until we meet again at the Travel Commons, thanks for stopping by and have a great week. Safe travels. Bye now.
Home alone, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying